downfield. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
What an end zone punt. Broken interception.
Touchdown, Zion.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us alongside Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. We have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to have two guests talking about the draft, a variety of different issues.
Not one.
Correct.
Two.
Dos. We're going to have Greg Cassell from NFL Films, who watches a boatload of film on each and every one of the prospects. So we'll get into who may be around for the Giants at number nine and his thoughts on a number of the prospects. And then later on in the program, we'll hear from former NFL quarterback who is now the Washington Huskies radio color analyst, that being Damon Heward, who will talk about Danny Shelton and all of the other players that are coming out of Washington. So certainly a lot to delve into over the next hour. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also weigh in on Twitter using hashtag Giants Chat. The schedule was released a few days ago, so if you want to weigh in on that, we will certainly discuss that. And if you have any questions with respect to the draft, we'll try to get in maybe some calls before we have to get to Greg Cosell, but obviously time is going to be crunched somewhat during the program. However, if you're on the lines, hold tight, and we will get to you before the end of the program. So a lot to delve into, at least off the top, and you might as well start with the schedule, which was released, as I mentioned, a few days ago, and now Giants fans can start to speculate for
also,
the next few months.
Also, keep in mind another thing that I do want to touch on, some of Jerry Reese's comments that he made earlier today. He met with the media. He had his pre-draft press conference, which I find kind of comical because obviously the Giants don't want to show their hand in regard to what they'd like to do in the NFL draft. So, you know, it's like a duck and weave for Jerry Reese. You know, he's being asked all these questions from the media, and then, like, really, honestly, how much can he really answer? So it is a fun 30 minutes, but nonetheless, I thought he said some important things that I want to get to a little bit later on the show before we do close out. But you mentioned the schedule. I'm excited about it. I hosted the show with John the other day, and I said, how can they not start off the season against an NFC East opponent? He felt that they were going to start off against San Francisco, which I thought actually could have been quite entertaining. But, of course, they start off at Dallas primetime. How about that? How about the Giants getting five primetime games? And not only that, four in the first 6 weeks. That's insane. It's exciting.
Well, it's the Odell Beckham effect, I'm sure. The fact that he produced at such a high level last season, obviously they want to showcase one of the best talents in the NFL. The one thing that jumped out to me, regardless of the opponents, which we pretty much knew, I'm surprised that there's so many divisional opponents at the top of the schedule. I mean, you just alluded to the fact there's a lot of primetime games, which obviously is extremely clear, but you have four divisional opponents in the first 7 weeks, and then in the final nine games, you just have two. Personally, and this is just personal preference, I like to see the divisional games a little bit later on in the season. I think teams have more of an opportunity to gel with one another, get a feel for one another, and obviously those games are extremely important because it determines who's going to win the division.
Yeah, and also, listen, a team grows, they change, there's an ebb and flow to a football season, so the Dallas Cowboys that the Giants are going to see on September 13th is going to be a much different Dallas Cowboy team that a team's going to see, let's say, in December. But obviously that's not the case. They play the Dallas Cowboys just a few weeks later on October 25th, but here is the positive. And I have to give credit to Paul Dottino, because I saw him yesterday here at the facility once the Greg Hardy suspension was announced. 10 games Greg Hardy will not be able to suit up for the Dallas Cowboys as of right now. Who knows what could happen? Maybe an appeal. Who knows what the NFLPA is going to try, I'm sure, to get in on this and lessen that. But nonetheless, I'm looking and assuming no less than six games if that 10-game suspension is changed. And what does that mean? The Dallas Cowboys, the game against the Giants, they would miss out on having Greg Hardy go up against that offensive line. So that's a big coup for the Giants in regard to the schedule facing the Dallas Cowboys without Greg Hardy twice. So that's pretty good. Like I said, I love the fact that they have so many primetime games. I love the fact that you got Tampa in November. I love that you got the Miami Dolphins in Miami in December. So hopefully Giants fans were really, really busy last night on Kayak or whatever travel site you go to try to, of course, book those flights. Because I'll tell you what, come November, come December, you want to get out of Dodge and two fantastic destinations in Florida for Giants fans to visit.
On the flip side, though, you have to go to Minnesota in Week 16, and who knows what to expect in the Minneapolis department.
To me, that's the only negative. I have to be honest with you. I dig the schedule. I like the schedule. I like the schedule better than the schedule I've seen the past 2 years for the Giants. Curious to get comments from Giants fans. Big build up to the Jets game on December 6th. I think that's going to be fun. As you said, probably the only negative going to Minnesota because, of course, they're playing at that outside stadium December 27th. That's not great. And to finish off January 3rd, listen, we know how competitive this division is. And chances are it's going to come down to that last week 16, week 17 of the NFL season. In the NFC East, of course, Washington plays Dallas. And it might be one of those win and you're in games for either team, either the Eagles or the Giants. So that Week 17 game is going to be a good one, and it's great that it's home. I like the Giants are at home that last Week 17 because I think that game is going to be really important, as it always is pretty much across the board in the NFC.
We've had a lot of differing of winners in terms of the top of the division standings over the last few years, so it wouldn't surprise me if it does come down to Week 17. Well, we mentioned off the top two guests today, and our first guest is on the line as we speak, and it is Greg Cosell, who has watched plenty of film on the prospects that will be entering the 2015 draft for NFL Films. Greg, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Lance, Anita, great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. You know, I'm a big fan. I think you're the best in the business. So let's get right to it.
Anita, we can only go downhill after that, but thank you.
obviously, this is a Giants show. You're on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. A lot of Giants fans out there. I do want to talk about the draft as a whole, but let's start specifically with the Giants drafting at 9. General Manager Jerry Reese just addressed the media just a few minutes ago and said, listen, best player available. Who's ever the best player is sitting at 9, that's who we're taking. So I'm going to turn this around on you based on your mock draft and how you think this is going to play out. Who's going to be the best player, 2-3 players available that you think the Giants could not miss out on drafting at 9?
Well, I think you know the draft works best when need meets value. And the Giants have a number of needs, so everybody says best player available. I personally don't believe that teams actually think that way. I think they say that. I think every team now needs to draft for need, basically. Now, you don't draft for need when you're 9 if the player you want's rated, 29th on your board. But, there's going to be 3, 4, 5 players in that range. And ultimately, you're going to draft for need. So I think you got to look at the O-line. There's not going to be a safety you would draft at 9, but the Giants need to come away with a safety in this draft because right now they really can't line up at safety, so they're going to need to do that. To me, Brandon Scherff, whose name has been associated with the Giants, I think he's a left guard in the NFL, and I think he could be an all-pro left guard. So the question is, do you draft a left guard with the 9th pick in the draft if you think he's going to be an all-pro? I think that's fine. I really like Andres Pete from Stanford. I think Andres Pete is a top 10 player in this draft. He's a left tackle or a right tackle. I think he can play left tackle, but some teams might see him as a right tackle. And clearly offensive line would be a position of need.
Greg, you just mentioned offensive line. I would agree. I'm sure the Giants would love to add depth in that department. You mentioned Scherff. You mentioned Pete. How much, though, is the drop-off between both players, number one, and then after those two, when you look at the Lyle Collins and some of the other players who may be projected to go in the first round, early second round, how much of a significant drop-off is there from maybe the top two to the rest of the pack?
Oh, I don't think there's a significant drop-off at all. I could easily see Lyle Collins being drafted in the top 15. He's another guy who played left tackle in college at LSU, Lance, and I think there'll be people who will project him at tackle, but he's another guy that I think if you put at guard could be an all-pro guard. As a run blocker, that guy's a bad guy. I mean, he might be the best run blocker in this class as far as just getting after people being nasty. If you're looking, you know, at a true tackle, DJ Humphreys from Florida is the best true left tackle prospect in this class. He's the most athletic. He's the smoothest mover. I think there's a number of offensive linemen who are, I don't want to say relatively close, that they're all the same, but I don't think there's a big drop-off at all.
Again, Greg Cosell joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Sticking with the Giants, in regard to, you mentioned the safety, a guy that I was turned on to a few weeks ago, Eric Rowe, cornerback out of Utah,
right,
who has been making the rounds, has been traveling around, meeting with all the teams, and getting rave reviews. His stock is rising, changing from a corner to the safety in the transition to the NFL. What have you seen out of his talent? Do you like him? Do you think he's going to go first round? And how good of a safety do you think he could be, Greg?
Well, you know, it's funny, Anita, because he played corner, as you know, at Utah, and he's 6'1", 205. So he fits the profile of a corner in today's NFL, and he played a lot of press man. He was comfortable doing it. I know that a lot of people do see him as a safety, and maybe that's where he'll end up. But I think because the premium placed on the corner position is so high, it would not surprise me if he starts out as a corner. Now, maybe if you're a team like the Giants and he's there in the second round and you 100% see him as a safety, then it makes sense. But normally guys who are 6'1", 205, who've played corner well in college and have press man cover skills, normally those guys get a shot at corner in the NFL.
Talking with Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Staying on the safety topic, Greg, and you had mentioned this off the top, that if you look at the needs right now for the Giants, safety is one of the positions that jumps off the page. Anita just threw out one. Who based on your evaluations, do you think is the top safety out there that not necessarily you take at number nine, but perhaps later in the first round or maybe even early in the second round?
Well, Lance, to me, safety is the most scheme-specific position in the NFL. So you have to decide how you want to use a safety. Like, for instance, if you want your safety to be interchangeable, to be able to play in the box, to be able to play single high, to be able to play in the back end and be able to have range and movement, then Landon Collins is not the guy you're going to draft. Now, that doesn't mean he's not a good prospect, but if that's what you want your safety to do, then Landon Collins is not that guy. A guy who can do those things would be Demaryius Randall from Arizona State. He can play the back end. He's got a box mentality. He'll come down and tackle. He can cover the slot. So it depends on what you want your safety to do. You know, we all talk about Cam Chancellor, who's a great player, but if Cam Chancellor was in a system where he had to play the back end on 80% of the snaps, he wouldn't be Cam Chancellor. So safety is the most scheme-specific position in the NFL.
Good stuff, Greg. I'm sitting here. I'm not sure if you're watching online, but I'm sitting here taking rampant notes. Let's look at the draft as a whole. And we had a scout on with us the other day, and kind of alluded to a possibility that Leonard Williams might fall to 9. And if he does, how intriguing would that be? A surprise for you if he was to drop to 9, and would that be you cannot pass up on Leonard Williams if you're the Giants if he does drop that far?
Well, I'll answer it this way, Anita. I don't think he will, but I wouldn't be surprised. I like Leonard Williams as a prospect. I don't think he's an oh-my-God transcendent prospect. I think he's very athletic. I think he uses his hands well, but I think he plays too high and has a tendency to show his chest. And when you do that in the NFL, the worst offensive lineman in the league can move you. So, I always try to think about, as I project players, where he's going to play. And he's not in a four-man D-line. He's not a three technique. He's not a penetrating defensive tackle. In a four-man D-line, which is what Spags is going to play, he's a base left defensive end. And if you go to your sub-package, I'm not sure if he's a true pass rusher at this point. Now, he's a prospect, and people forget this. The kid's 21 years old. In 2 years, he may be much better at all these things, but right now, I don't see him as a guy that's an automatic big-time star as a rookie.
Greg, you just wrote an article for Yahoo Sports where you broke down all of the pass rushers, and many of them are expected to go within the top 10. My takeaway from that article was the fact that it seems you feel a lot of these tweeners, these linebackers, the Dante Fowlers of the world, the Bud Dupree's of the world, it really comes down to how well they're going to fit into the scheme of the team that eventually selects them. Is that a fair synopsis of your takeaway?
Well, that's what it comes down to. Teams, you know, unless a guy is you know, truly transcendent, okay, most players are evaluated based on how they fit the specific team. If you sit down with a defensive coordinator of a team or even their, you know, scouts or GM, they're going to talk about their team. They want to know how a guy is going to play for them. Can he make them better on their team? So that's the way teams look at this. So there are players who you think of, you see them play, and you say to yourself, he's a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's an edge player. He's going to have to rush the quarterback, or he can do something else. You know, that's the way everybody does this. You have to get a feel for what the player's strengths, his attributes, you know, his traits are, and see if he fits in how you play.
Again, Greg Cosell joining us. You can find him at NFL Films. Wealth of knowledge, I'm sure, as many who are watching can really gather. I've been following on Twitter. I know you've been doing a lot of spots, and so I've been following on Twitter some of the guys that you really like. I find this interesting. You feel that Todd Gurley, and correct me if I'm wrong, again, this is stuff that I found out on Twitter, is the best player coming out. Is that your number one player overall, Greg?
Well, I think you could make that argument, Anita. I think he's a top 3-4 player in the draft. The big issue with Gurley is the injury, and you know, he may be a guy who has to start the season on PUP. And I don't know if, you know, most teams want a guy who's going to be ready to play. So I'm not sure that he'd be viewed that way simply because of that. And of course, he did have a major knee injury, so teams will evaluate that differently. But I think if you're just looking at the player and put the injury aside, I think you can make an argument he's the best player. He's certainly top five.
And so kind of give us an idea, his game, how does it trend? Like, give us a player in the NFL that's had great success that you feel that his game is very similar to.
I think there's elements of Steven Jackson in his prime, of Marshawn Lynch, and he's got more top-end speed than both.
Another thing really quick that I find interesting is you're kind of in that Jaws camp who feels that Marcus Mariota is better than Jameis Winston. Can you elaborate on that?
I struggle with these two guys. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm in that camp. The issue when you evaluate Anita is they're college players, okay? So they've got positives, they've got negatives. They've got strengths, and they've got some things that concern you, which is why it's very hard for me to do mock drafts and make lists of players, because it's how do you feel? When you evaluate the guy, ultimately it's how do you feel about the strengths and how do you feel about the things that bother you? Now, if you think the things that bother you are not too bad or can be coached out, then you feel good. If you don't think they can, then you always have a little bit of pause. So I think both players have clear, defined strengths, but there's a couple of things that, in Winston's case, that are clear that are bothersome. In Mariota's case, you're unsure because he hasn't done those things in college. And I've learned over the years never to say a guy can't do something, because I've gotten nailed on that numerous times, believe me, where I was too black and white. It was, oh, he can't do that, and then he learns how to do it, and he plays well. But there's things that always concern you.
You had mentioned, obviously, off-the-field concerns has to be a part of the equation whenever you're evaluating prospects. You look at the corner group, Greg, and you know, one of those players is Marcus Peters, even though he's still projected to go in the first round. And then there's obviously Trey Waynes. From your evaluation of the corner group, how much, just like the offensive line, as I asked you earlier, is the drop-off from maybe the first two to perhaps the next cluster of guys?
Oh, talent-wise, I don't know. You know, I think you could make an argument that Jalen Collins is as talented as any corner in the draft. And that 3 or 4 years down the road, we could be talking about him as the best corner. Now, it may not happen, but I think he's got that kind of talent. Marcus Peters is a big-time press man corner. He's an in-your-face, aggressive, intimidating player. When I put on the tape of Marcus Peters playing against Jalen Strong couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. And Jalen Strong is 6'2", 217. But Marcus Peters just shut him right down. I mean, Marcus Peters is arguably the best press man corner in this draft.
Last question for you, at least for me. Lance, not sure if you have another one before we let Greg go. I was told that Danny Shelton is going to be the biggest bust in this draft. Agree with that or disagree with that? Can you hear me?
It looks like we have some technical issues. Greg, can you hear
us? My phone's still on, so it's on their end.
Greg, can you hear me?
It looks like we may have lost Greg, so there must be some technical issues on his end. Obviously, we'll try to figure that out. But we do appreciate Greg Cosell for chiming in over the last few minutes.
I wanted to get his take on that because, of course, we're having Damon Heward on in just a few minutes, and we're going to talk about Danny Shelton.
So well, he'll be able to answer that question.
So I'm just curious. I'm curious how Greg felt about that. There's a pretty big shock for me, but
apparently that question alone had some technological effects, Anita, so we thank you very much for that question.
Maybe he just didn't want to answer the question.
Well, I thought with the momentary pause, you just had him speechless. You threw a curveball at him, but
what's the one thing that he said today that stands out for you?
Well, I thought his thought process in terms of the safeties was interesting, that I agree with him. You know, you can't just say, well, this safety has a lot of upside, we'll bring him in. It's got to be somebody that fits the scheme. And he was talking about how a lot of the top safety prospects are of the strong safety variety. Now, if you look at the Giants roster with the Nat Burhays and the Cooper Taylors, most people would say they're strong safeties. So maybe you would need more of a free safety if you were to go in that direction in the draft, or perhaps you're going to try to mold somebody. So, you know, that was an interesting takeaway. The other thing that was interesting, and, you know, if you have a chance to check out his article, which was on Yahoo Sports, I know you've read it, and a few of us here at the Giants have, his evaluation in terms of the defensive linemen, a lot of them, in his mind, project to be those 3-4 edge linebackers. Now, the Giants scheme is obviously a 4-3. Does that mean if you went after a Dante Fowler or Bud Dupree, now this is obviously the game of speculation, assuming it would fall to number 9, would they be a good fit for Spag's scheme? I think, you know, those are the types of things you'd have to look at when you evaluate a lot of these pass rushers.
Yeah, another thing that I've gathered from, of course, all the interviews he's done, a big fan of Dante Fowler. And also, Nassib, keep in mind, when Nassib came out, Greg Cosell really was pretty high on Nassib. I want to say he had him as one of his, like, top three quarterbacks coming out the year that Nassib came out. So, and I'm a big Nassib fan. And I understand why Giants fans kind of might be on the fence with him, because Eli never gets injured, thank God. So you don't really have a chance to see Nassib, of course, unless it's preseason. But Nassib is doing some great things here, and I think he's got a bright future. If he stays with this organization and he plays in this offensive scheme, I think Nassib has a bright future here when, of course, Eli is ready to move on.
Well, Nassib, I thought, made huge strides from preseason of 2 years ago to the last preseason in terms of his continuity and his confidence as a quarterback, in which he was able to adjust to Ben McAdoo's system. And the fact that he's still on a rookie contract, he's young, he's got tremendous amount of upside. It's nice to know that you have somebody who has really honed his skill set and obviously is energetic when it comes to studying the playbook.
Absolutely.
With that being said, we're going to open up the phone lines here in between both of our guests. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll have Damon Heward, who is the radio analyst for the Huskies. So we'll be focusing on their prospects, a little bit more on Marcus Peters, their corner, Danny Shelton, their defensive tackle, as well as Shaq Thompson. Is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? Damon Heward will certainly weigh in on that. Right now, we want to give an opportunity for the fans to chime in. On Twitter, you can use hashtag GiantsChat, the lines 201-939-4513. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, Anita. How are you going today?
Welcome.
Doing well, Derek. What's happening?
On your guess, I mean, I disagree with him with Pete. I just don't think he's a top 10 talent in this draft. But that's his opinion, and it's my opinion. I went back and looked at the highlights of the games last year, and when I was looking at the highlights, two things stood out to me is that we need to get pressure on the quarterback, and we can't have someone like Charlie Brown ever starting again for us. So with that said, I know we need a lineman. The question is, we ran for, I guess, 3.6 yards a rush last year. If we got, in your opinion, Lance and Anita, if we got Sheriff, do you think that goes up close to 4.1, 4.2? And how do you think that differentiates if we got someone like a Lincoln Thomas?
Well, to answer your question, Sheriff Derrick was known for his run-blocking ability at Iowa, and if you want to do a little bit of homework, the numbers on the ground showcase that. It's a big reason why they thrived in terms of their rushing attack. Part of it was Sheriff's ability to not just protect the quarterback, but his ability to get penetration into the second and third layers of the defense. So you would assume if he was to fit into this giant scheme, regardless of where they put him, that the running game would benefit as a result, because that's obviously one of his strengths when you look at the characteristics and you evaluate his game. To give you a number, you know, would it go from 3.6 to 4.1 as you threw it out? I mean, right now that would be a game of speculation. I could throw out any number. I would say that you could put his name and improvement in the running game together. I think that would be a fair way to go about it. How much of a significant improvement? Right now it's too early to tell. You'd have to see, assuming they draft him, how he fits with the rest of the offensive linemen and so forth.
Just to kind of add to that a little bit here, and that is, keep in mind, this is an offense that towards, you know, as the year progressed, the offensive linemen and, of course, the players started feeling a lot more comfortable in the scheme, and so it was a transition. It was a growth period. At the same time, you had Rashad Jennings, who unfortunately got injured. And you had Andre Williams, who I think the world of. I think he's an unbelievable talent. I think he's going to have a lot of success in the NFL. But as a rookie, was having a hard time in regard to reading the holes and his timing. Now, this year, you have Jeff Schwartz back. Hopefully the Giants go out and draft an offensive lineman in the first or second round, improve the offensive line in regard to free agency and whatnot. But on top of that, you've got an offense that already has 1 year under its belt with this new scheme, is more comfortable, healthier, and then now the addition of Shane Vereen. I think there's a lot of positives here. I don't think you could just focus on if the Giants go out and get Sheriff, their yards per carry is going to increase from X to Z. I think there's a bigger picture here, a lot more elements that I think are going to factor in as to why the Giants hopefully will have a better rushing attack.
Yeah, I'll just say this before I go. With that said, I think the talent on the pass rushers drops off sharper than the talent on the guards. And I think that no matter what you think, I think that Sheriff is going to play guard in the NFL. So I want a pass rusher and then at the ninth pick and then come back and get the best available guard in the second round. And you guys have a good day.
All right, Derek, appreciate the phone call.
If you're just tuning in, we had Greg Cassell, who's with NFL Films, really, really knowledgeable, very well respected in our industry. And he was talking about Sheriff. He feels, and a number of scouts feel, that Sheriff, whatever team he's drafted to, will play at the guard position, not the tackle. And obviously, the tackle position, a more highly touted, a more valued position. When it comes to drafting, he feels that Pete would be an excellent left or right tackle, can play both sides. That's why I think he has him in his top 10. And he also said DJ Humphries, he said, is the best tackle coming out, period, hands down. So I guess the question is, and he kind of threw it back our way, Lance, and that is, do you take a guard, even though he's anticipating Sheriff to be an all-pro, but do you take a guard at 9? That's really, usually you take a tackle in the top 10. But if this is a guard who you feel will translate and be an all-pro at 9, is that something that you want to do?
Well, regardless of what he translates to, I think you also need to take into consideration his experience in college and his versatility. You know, whether or not he comes into the NFL and he immediately plays tackle, at least you can tap into that experience factor. Similar to Richburg, who had experience in terms of center and guard. I think versatility is something that, you know, the Giants, based on some of their previous signings and their previous picks, they certainly value that department. And whether or not he's going to play the exact position that he did in college, the fact that he at least has the experience there, I think makes him an attractive candidate, just as some of the other offensive line prospects that you threw out who have played multiple positions. Because you never know, Anita, somebody may go down. And Jerry Reese even talked about this in his press conference earlier today. His exact quote was, "You can never have enough depth at any position." And he's 100% right. You just can't anticipate injuries. So if you have somebody that can play tackle, can play guard, can play center, in a pinch you can throw them in as long as they're comfortable with this game.
Do you want to, just really quick, I know we've got some calls on, but again, I just want to kind of recap what Jerry Reese communicated to the media earlier today. He met with the media around 11:30 a.m. A few things really quick. He said that the Giants, as always, are very mindful of character, very cautious of the players that they draft. In regard to how he thinks that this draft is going to play out, I guess one of the questions was, what was his mock draft? How does he feel the players are going to play? He says, you never know. In fact, he went on so far to say that, listen, everybody's anticipating these quarterbacks to go 1 and 2. Don't be surprised if one of them drop all the way to 15. Keep that in mind. And we talked about this a little bit earlier on the show. Best player available, hands down, period. Doesn't matter about position, best player available. Whoever they do draft at 9, this is a player, because he's 9 overall, needs to come in and play immediately, play quickly, and have an impact either on the offensive or defensive side of the ball. Jerry Reese believes that Sheriff could play both guard and tackle, mind you. He said that. He shared that to the media. Expecting big things from Eli Manning, second year under a new system, getting Victor Cruz back, the tight ends, having experience, and, of course, the addition of Shane Vereen. And was really excited about Shane Vereen in regard to free agency, complimented him in regard to third down. And he also, another thing he said is that the two linebackers that he brought in are going to compete for a starting job. And I'll tell you what, I like JT Thomas a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot. I think JT Thomas wins the starting job. I'm really high on this young man. I think he's really special, and it was really exciting to hear that, you know, I like going into camp with a competition at a position. That excites me. So I'm excited to see what happens with this linebacking core this year.
Well, I go back to a few years ago when they had 6 linebackers and nobody knew which 3 were even going to start. They all competed. So I think the Giants, you go back to the archives and realize they have a track record of it's not necessarily knowing who's going in as the starters at that very position. All right, let's try to squeeze in a few more calls before we have Damon Heward, the Huskies radio analyst. JD is in North Carolina. JD, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Not a problem, JD. What do you have?
So as far as the defense goes, I mean, aside from safety, I don't really think there's another position that a rookie is going to come in and start at for the Giants this year. So I just want to get your guys' opinion and your projections as who you think the starting 11 on defense is going to be.
All right, let's start with the line. Obviously, JPP, DeMontre Moore, right?
I think Robert Ayers has a legitimate shot to start, too.
So you think that'll be a competition for that opposite?
Absolutely.
Colin Jenkins.
Jonathan Hankins is definitely going to be a starter.
And then working in Bromley.
Correct.
Right?
Remember, Kenrick Ellis could very well start, too. I mean, I think it really depends on what they see in Colin Jenkins and how they want to utilize him. Is he going to be a mix-and-match type of guy? Is he going to start on down one? Ellis is a seasoned veteran, so it would not surprise me as him and Hankins could very well be the starting DTs as well.
So some interesting competition and a lot of talent that Spags has to work with on the defensive line. Going one step back in regard to the linebackers, like I said, I think that JT Thomas wins the starting job, and Jerry did allude to the fact that he plays better the week, the Will side linebacker. I think Devon Kennard plays the strong side, and I think that Beeson and Jamal McClain rotate at the mic. That's what I think happens.
I can see that playing out.
Just my opinion. You asked for it. And Prince, obviously, DRC at the cornerback position. And I'll let you take over the safety because I have no clue.
Well, there's only 2 safeties on the roster. I mean, to get back to JD's question, it's not even a game of speculation. At this point, there's 2 safeties.
I think that there's going to be cuts along the way in regard to training camp. I think that there's teams out there that have a lot of depth at the safety position that they're going to be cutting a guy that maybe they'd like to keep on to, keep a hold of, but they can't. And possibly somebody, a name we don't know yet will be a part of this roster. And I do believe that the Giants are going to go out and address the safety position in the draft. And so I think there's going to be some competition there. And we still don't listen. Stevie Brown still hasn't signed with anyone. So you never know. And that was another question.
Jerry Reese was asked about that.
Posed to Jerry Reese. And he said he's monitoring this. They're monitoring the situation. He's going to keep their options open. So we don't know. So I don't think you really can decide or have an idea of what's going to happen in the safety position. I think there's so many uncertainties.
Well, the one other thing we should note is Josh Gordy, who they just brought in, who has experience in the secondary. Jerry Reese mentioned that he could see him as a safety as well. Yep. So, you know, that adds to the mix. Plus, Tom Coughlin talked about how Shockey Brown may be converted to safety. Right now, I think it'd be very difficult to address JD's phone call, his question, and appreciate the phone call, JD, in terms of laying out all 11 starters. I think the biggest question mark right now is at the safety position, because do you keep guys who are currently penciled in at that position, Anita, or do you convert a few corners? I could see them, for example, taking a combination of a Nat Burhe and a Josh Gordy. I could also see a Nat Burhe and a Shockey Brown, or I could see somebody in the draft coming in. So, you know, there's so many factors that need to be straightened out over the next few weeks before maybe the Giants get a better idea of who's going to be penciled in there.
Like, you know how big and crazy and insane Paul Dottino is about Sheriff? I'm just as big and insane and crazy about Eric Rowe. So the Giants are going to get a great player at nine, whoever it is. I've even said, don't be surprised if one of the wide receivers.
Correct.
John and I had a scout on, Mike Giddings, and he said that both Cooper and White are better receivers than any of the receivers that came out last year. And he had Odell as a blue. So if he's saying those two guys are better, he has them both as blue. And I don't think that they're going to fall. But if they do fall, I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants take a wide receiver. So you never know. But I do believe the Giants will get a great player at nine, regardless of the position, regardless of what needs this organization has. At two, if Rowe is still available, if he doesn't go in the first round, because, like I said, I'm hearing he's making the visits, and he is impressing a lot of teams. If he drops the second round and the Giants can get him, I think that would be huge. That's my guy. That's the guy that I'm rooting for.
Well, I could see the Giants trying to address that position in the second round or a little bit later on, and it goes back to last year's draft. Remember, the first safety didn't go until about, 15 or 18, if you look at Calvin Pryor and HaHa Clinton Dix. So I would be very surprised if somebody winds up being taken very early at that safety position. And even Landon Collins, who many project as the top safety, at least on the board, is not necessarily being projected until you get to the late 20s or maybe even 30 in terms of round number one. As far as the wide receiver position is concerned, even Jerry Reese at his press conference today mentioned you can never have enough depth, as I keep repeating, at any position. So if they have a wide receiver that they like at number nine, it would not surprise me if they went in that direction. We talked about some of the Washington Huskies prospects a little bit earlier on, such as Danny Shelton, and plenty of others. And to delve into them a little bit more in detail, we are now joined by former NFL quarterback and the radio analyst for the Washington Huskies, Damon Heuer. Damon, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything is good. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Not a problem. Let's start with Danny Shelton, who clearly is the top prospect out of Washington, Damon. When it comes to evaluating his play, his numbers in terms of getting to the quarterback really jump off the page, but how much of a balanced player he is in terms of stopping the run as well as getting to the quarterback?
Yeah, no, he's an explosive player. There's no doubt about it. Super athletic for his size. I know his 40 time didn't raise any eyebrows, or maybe it did for how bad it was. But he plays so hard between the tackles. He's got quick feet for a guy who weighs 330, 340 pounds. And obviously his productivity speaks for itself. I mean, you're talking about a guy with 16.5 tackles for loss from that interior defensive tackle position, 9 total sacks. And he was a mountain to move in the run game. So if you're looking for a guy to occupy space, we can also give you some production getting to the quarterback on third down. I don't think there's a better prospect to draft than Danny Shelton.
It's interesting, Damon, because, we spend a lot of time having, we have scouts on and And there are a number of scouts out there who feel that he could be the biggest bust in this year's NFL draft. I guess what I'm asking is, you know this player better than most. What are they seeing that you think is a red flag for them, that this is something that they
feel? That's interesting. I'll be honest with you. That's the first time I've heard it, and I'm right here in the backyard. I have not heard the word bust tied to his name. And, you know, I think, you know, what I can say, but I've been around the kid for four years, and I've seen how much he's grown, how much he's matured. You know, he's one of the first academic All-Americans we've had around here in 20 years. So he's a smart guy. He gets it. He cares about football. He cares about taking care of his family. And he's a super productive player. He works hard in the weight room. Now, he does love to eat. Maybe that's a red flag. I don't know. But I have not heard the word potential bust tied to his name whatsoever. He played so well last year. In a difficult year in some ways. Some of our kids didn't quite handle the transition as well with the change in staffs. Danny bought into it, had the best year he's ever had. And I don't see that happening at all for Danny at the next level, if I'm being perfectly honest.
David, if you look at the style of offenses in the Pac-12, a lot tests the opposing defenses and guys like Danny Shelton to really run sideline to sideline, specifically a defensive tackle. He's got to cover a lot of ground. How much did that challenge, you think, during the course of his collegiate career help him in terms of him becoming more of a well-rounded player?
Well, I think, you know, as an offense here at the University of Washington, we kind of ran a pro-style attack until about 2 years ago. So really every day in spring ball, every day in training camp, you know, until kind of that scout week you played Oregon, did they really pick up the tempo on defense. And I thought there were times maybe you could look at him early in his career and say, man, this guy just isn't conditioned. Well, when we changed as an offense philosophically here at the University of Washington, Sparks last year here and then Coach Chris Peterson last year, the defense had to practice that tempo all day, every day, and everything we did. And he is a super well-conditioned athlete for how big he is. And then, as you said, play against all those defenses, all those offenses in the Pac-12 that spread the field, that play out tempo. I mean, that is hard for a 330-pound man to do. And, you know, yeah, he'd get rotated in and out of there at times, but he was on the field for the most part. You don't have the numbers and the productivity that he did. So to question his, you know, his confidence, his cardio, all that stuff. The dude's played a lot of football at a fast tempo. He will be well conditioned when he arrives at the National Football League.
Damon Heward joining us. Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's talk about Marcus Peters, cornerback. In your eyes, is he a shutdown corner? Can that relate to the NFL? And what corner in the NFL would you most compare his likeness to?
Oh, that's a tough question. You know, I'm 5-6 years removed from the game right now, and, you know, I guess I can go back in time a little bit. But, you know, Marcus, you know, he's a physical guy. There's no doubt about it. He's not afraid to stick his head in there and make a tackle. He's got really good ball skills. I think in this day and age where the Seahawks have sort of set the standard of what an NFL corner looks like, they want him long and lean. He has some of those characteristics. He's got good straight line speed. I'd say he's faster than he is quicker. You know, so he certainly has that pro style cornerback, you know, that you're looking for. Obviously, you know, he's had some issues here with both staffs on and off the field. And it cut his senior year short, and it's certainly going to cost him. So, you know, he's a kid that, you know, has hopefully learned from his mistakes, and will move on and bring the right attitude into an NFL locker room. But he does have the potential to have a long career and be successful. But I think there are still some maturity and growing up issues that he needs to deal with, you know, if he is going to have a fruitful NFL career.
You just touched on the maturity concerns, and obviously that's been well documented, Damon, during the course of his tenure. What about when it comes to studying the playbook? You know, a lot of the things that have raised eyebrows about his concerns in the maturity department have been his demeanor on the sidelines. But, you know, you've seen this team in terms of how it interacts with one another behind closed doors. When it comes to studying, when it comes to learning the X's and O's, how would you evaluate his progress there?
Well, you know, he is the son of a football coach. I think his daddy coached him in high school. I think he does enjoy the game, obviously, and does take some pride into, you know, his technique and some of those things. And obviously, if you want to thrive at the next level, you better buy into the to the X's and the O's and the fundamentals and the techniques, because everybody else is. If you don't, you're showing the door pretty quickly. So, I think that was some of the challenges last year, though, if I'm being honest. He'd kind of done some things a certain way for the first few years of his career, and maybe didn't necessarily buy into kind of some of the new coverages and things we were doing. And that's just a lack of maturity. And again, if Marcus can grow up, and from all accounts, it sounds like he has, he's owned up to his mistakes and different things, he'll have a good chance.
I want to ask you about Shaq Thompson. You have, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank,
Mel Kiper from
ESPN. He came out with an article, I want to say last week, and where he has the Giants' first three draft picks, and one is Sheriff in the first round, the other is Eric Rowe in the second round, and then Shaq Thompson in the third round. A lot of people don't feel that he'll even last that long. So, number one, do you think he'll last that long? And number two, kind of give us some insight on his talent, his ability, and what would be a better position for him, a strong safety or an outside linebacker?
Yeah, I'm just going to go out there and say that, I've been back here for 5-6 years now on campus in some capacity or another, and Shaq Thompson is my favorite kid that's come through this program.
Wow.
Not only is he just an awesome athlete, football player, he's just a great kid that I want to go hang out with. He just gets it. And he's a leader. He's a fun guy. He's competitive. And he's just a cool cat. And he's everything that you want in your locker room. Now, obviously, why Mel Kiper hasn't fallen to the third round is because he's so good at everything, but no one knows what the one thing he's going to do is. And if there's any uncertainty with that first-round pick, it probably drops it to the second round. I mean, the kid averaged 7.5 yards a carry as a running back. He finished third on our team in tackles with 90-some-odd tackles, missing 4 or 5 games on defense, playing running back. The touchdowns he scored on defense, he's an incredible playmaker. But again, the question mark is, what position does he play? Is he an outside will linebacker at 225, 30 pounds, or is he a Cam Chancellor type strong safety? Is he a running back? I mean, those are great problems to have, but when you're an NFL football team and you're investing millions of dollars, the first-round pick has to be a sure thing. I don't think anybody out there can completely figure out where he fits in. But the team that does figure it out is going to have an amazing football player, an even better kid, and a great asset to their program.
Well, Damon, you just mentioned, obviously, that's the million-dollar question. But in terms of how Washington utilized him, and I know this is difficult to hone in on one exact position. You just mentioned he was a running back. He did this. He did that. Where did he thrive the most, in your opinion, at least from a defensive standpoint, when they let him loose as a safety or when he was able to do his magic as a linebacker?
I thought in both positions he performed well. Just a playmaker, The guy, he's going to get a pick six. He's going to strip sack. He's going to steal the ball from a running back and take it to the house. The guy is just going to make plays. He is so fluid. He is so athletic. The different pundits have him playing, some of them have him at safety. Some have him at linebacker. If I put a gun to my head, I honestly, it's going to depend on the system, but I would love to see him kind of in that Cam Chancellor role in a single high safety football team, coming down and run support, but also having that ability to cover in the flat. I mean, the reality is the National Football League in a lot of ways is changing. You're seeing more, 4 wide receiver sets and shotgun, and he can be that guy, in the slot, in that nickel position, there for run support, but also covering guys. He's athletic enough to cover slot receivers and kind of hybrid tight ends at the next level. He'll be a real asset wherever he goes.
Talking with Damon Huard, who is the radio analyst for the Washington Huskies, also former NFL quarterback. Damon, before we let you go, one other player that I want to get your thoughts on, who probably falls under the radar compared to the other three prospects we just named, is the linebacker, Haole Kikaha. Correct, yes. I'm glad you helped me out there. I didn't want to butcher the last name. It's not necessarily one that runs off the tongue very smoothly. He's had 2 ACL surgeries, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a concern, number one? And what type of upside do you see out of him?
Yeah, he has had any surgeries, as you mentioned, but boy, it was not evident at all last year. I think, he'd been a good football player early on in his career, got hurt, And then, you know, but got healthy toward the end of this thing. And his numbers last year were stupid. I think he led the nation in tackles for loss. He had 25 some odd, 19 sacks. He is a guy who is purely that edge pass rusher. Again, there's a few question marks with him. You know, can he put his hand in the dirt, come off the edge? Is he big enough to stand up to offensive tackles at the next level? Can he cover in the flat at his size if you have to drop him into coverage? Last year for us, he did it all. I mean, he was a special, special talent. I think some of those question marks might drop him a little bit, but he is a super productive guy, a grinder, a hard worker, a bender. You know, yeah, he might not have run the fastest 40 times, but he's just slippery. He has this bend and ability to get around the edge and get to the quarterback, a super physical kid, and another guy that you're going to love in your locker room. Comes to practice every day, brings that intensity, and he's going to get a shot. You know, I don't know what round he goes right, gets drafted in, but I believe he's going to have a nice little career in the NFL if they can find the right role for him.
Damon Ewart, who is the radio analyst for the Washington Huskies, kind enough to give us a few minutes. Damon, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much.
You got it, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You as well. So a number of interesting notes on some of the Huskies, Danny Shelton, Shaq Thompson. Even he had difficulty, Anita, determining where exactly you put him. You never hear about how versatility can hurt a player, but
I was just going to say, you know, my goodness, you know, that's not such a bad problem to have. I think if you're Spags, if you're a defensive coordinator and you have a guy that has this much character and is that's what you want to hear, right? I mean, when a team loses and a coach addresses the media after a loss, what does he say? Nobody made plays. You know, we didn't have a playmaker step up today. And what's Damon saying? Damon's saying, listen, you know, the reason why a lot of people feel this young man is falling is because there is no identity for him. But if he's a playmaker, I want him. You know what I mean? Like, what coach would, especially if his character is all that Damon Ewart expressed to us just now. So I'm excited. If he's there at three, hopefully the Giants will grab him. But good to hear. Good to know about a player like that, you know?
I always mention about how I'm excited to see what Spags is going to do with Devon Kennard. If Spags can get his hands on a guy like Shaq Thompson, you can only imagine perhaps creatively how he can utilize him in trying to help in coverage or at least get to the quarterback and stop the run. We want to close out the program with a number of callers. I know a number of people have patiently been waiting on the line, so we're going to get to as many as we can at 201-939-4513 being the telephone number. Let's start with Derek in Philly. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Doing well, Derek. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I wanted to ask about the offensive line. I wanted to ask, in your opinion, okay, you know Beattie's going to be a starter, you know, assuming it's a healthy Schwartz and Richburg and Justin Pugh and Newhouse. Not saying that he's definitely going to be a starter, but do you think that Sheriff is better than any of those guys going into week one in Dallas?
Better than any of the guys on the Giants offensive line?
Yeah, on the offensive line. Like, okay, like say like a Schwartz and maybe Pugh and Newhouse. I mean, you figure Beattie's not going nowhere, of course. Richburg's not going nowhere.
I'll take it this way. If the Giants draft Sheriff at 9, based on everything that I've been hearing from the scouts and whatnot, I would imagine they would keep Pugh at the tackle position and Sheriff would start at the guard position. I think your offensive line would be Beattie, Schwartz, Richburg, Sheriff, and Pugh.
Pugh at the side.
That's if the Giants draft Sheriff. That's what I think your offensive line would look like.
The other thing that I'll throw out, Derek, to piggyback off of Anita's point, and I know a lot of people weigh in and say if you draft a guy at number 9, he should automatically be penciled in as the starter. One of the things that I brought up, and I believe this was on a Fact or Fiction or a mailbag commentary that we had up on Giants.com about who's going to be the starting 5 offensive line. Keep in mind, last few drafts that the Giants have had in which they have taken an offensive lineman up there, that guy has not necessarily automatically been penciled in as the starter. He became a starter as a result of an injury. So I don't think you could overlook that. I'm not saying that the Sheriff and guys like that are not starter eligible, but the Giants sometimes progressively move a guy into the line as opposed to all of a sudden day one giving him that job. You look at Justin Pugh. Remember, David Deal got banged up. That opened the door. Weston Richburg comes in because Jeff Schwartz gets hurt. So I think you need to also look at it from that perspective. Before you start evaluating, is this rookie better than everybody else? Sometimes the rookie needs time just to adjust to life in the NFL.
Okay, I understand that. And a guy that you can move right in like that, do you think that he's be worth to get at number nine if he's not amongst the 11 that's out there on opening day?
Well, but you can never have enough depth. I mean, I think that's how you have to look at the draft, Derek, to answer your question. Ideally, you want the ninth pick to automatically come in and start, but you want somebody also that's going to be on a rookie contract that you have a security blanket for X amount of years and perhaps will make enough of an impact in year one. Just because somebody doesn't start week one, and once again, this is just speculation. There's a lot of things that have to be worked out before we get to training camp and so forth. But I think whoever you draft at number nine, by the time the season ends, they're going to get playing time. I'm just saying week one, I don't know if they're necessarily going to be penciled in as a starter then. That's all I'm referring to.
All right, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
You got it, Derek. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for ringing.
I understand what you're saying, Lance, and I totally agree with you, but I just feel like if you are a player that's drafted in the first round of the NFL draft, I'm just a big believer in that you need to be a starter in the NFL, and you need to make an impact on the team that drafted you. If you're a first-round pick, especially if you're a top 10 pick, I'm
not disagreeing with that. I think you need to make an impact, but whether or not they make an impact in week one or it takes them maybe until week four to make an impact, I don't think that's necessarily detrimental to your season.
Like, for example, Eric Ebron, to me, was the biggest bust last year. You know, for the Detroit Lions to take him the first round and, of course, expecting immediate impact and immediate compliment to Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate's there, right now?
Correct.
Golden
yep.
Tate. And just couldn't even get on the field. Couldn't even get on the field. Couldn't even start. You know, that's unacceptable.
Well, number one, he was hurt at times throughout the season. And I'm not trying to list a number of excuses. And the other thing I'll throw out, Anita, while you do want impact immediately, and everybody looks at Odell Beckham and what he did, and you can't expect everybody to be Odell Beckham every year. I think it's only fair to evaluate a draft pick until you give him sometimes 2 or 3 years in the league. For all we know, using Ebron as an example, after this year, after the following year, he may reap tremendous rewards as a result of where he was taken. So, you know, after a small sample size of games, I don't think we necessarily close the door on a prospect. I think you got to wait and see what happens.
I'm not saying close the door on him. I just, to me, looking back, if you know, I'm looking at last year's first round picks, I'm saying, wow, they really hit and missed on that one. You know, I mean,
well, if you look,
and
if
who
you look
knows,
at
I mean,
the
who
small
knows,
sample size,
you know, maybe,
absolutely.
You know, maybe this year he hits the scene, you know, large and in charge. You know, maybe, you know, there are some guys out there that just need a little extra time to, like, learn a system, understand. You know, they're slow learners. I don't know. I don't know anything about him, so I don't know what the issue was. But I'm just a big believer. You go in the first round, especially you go top 10, top 15, I feel you need to have an impact on a team immediately.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Rocky is in Florida. Rocky, what's happening? Rocky, are you there?
What's up, Lance?
What's happening, Rocky? What's on your mind?
Hello, Nathan.
How we doing, Rocky?
How y'all doing?
Doing well. So what's happening?
Okay. One, the whole sheriff thing, like I said, I don't want us to go O-line. I get everybody talking about we need to protect Eli, but I think our O-line's better than what everybody's saying. And to me, he's like an all-pro guard, like a Chris Knee. He can play right tackle, he's a good right tackle like Kareem McKenzie, and then he's an okay run blocking left tackle like a deal, but I don't see that you go with him in the first round. I think we need to go DB here, you know, whether you're talking about corner, Trey Waynes, or trading down maybe with Cleveland, get that extra second, third round pick with Landon Collins, you know.
Well, in terms of a safety, I think number nine, and this is just based on trends, Rocky, that would be pretty high to go in the direction of a safety. I could see a corner going at number nine to relate to what you're talking about. If
Trey Lance is on the board, he fits Flag's scheme. I think you pull the trigger there if he's there. But if he's not there, I would rather trade down, try to pick up that extra second, third round pick, and maybe address the safety issue or the corner issue later, you know.
Well, as Anita threw out, a guy like Eric Rowe, I mean, I think there's going to be other quality safeties out there as the draft progresses. So to answer your question, I think that the Giants could very well address that safety position a little bit later on.
Hey, I like Eric Rowe, and I like what Anita said, but I don't know that he's going to be in that little honey spot that I call it, you know. And that guy Mike that called two episodes ago on the show, he said he didn't think that was an inside slash Mike linebacker worthy of a top three pick, I think it said, he said. I know that Anita likes him, but I don't agree with that. To me, and they didn't even say Stephon Anthony's name. To me, he's a decent replacement, and you grab him in the second round if he's there at 40, though.
All right, Rocky. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. In terms of the linebacker position, I didn't necessarily hear exactly who he was referring to. I don't know if you heard the middle linebacker, but most of the linebackers that are expected to go in the top 10, just to piggyback off of Rocky's comment, are significant outside rushers, not necessarily middle guys that I've been hearing about that are going to go that high.
I want to say it was a question, and again, all our shows are archived, and so this was Tuesday's show. Mike Giddings, who's a professional scout who helps a ton of teams, has been in the business a long time, is extremely, extremely knowledgeable, created the system called Blue, Red, Purple in regard to how he ranks his players. And he had Odell Beckham Jr. as a blue last year, just FYI. So I want to say the question was, John asked him about the tweeners, you know, because there's so much, you know, certain linebackers would do well with certain teams because of their scheme and their defense of the 3-4 and the 4-3, and how do tweeners play into those? And that was the question, and he kind of got into, you know, certain players that he felt have less value just because of how they don't necessarily fit into a scheme of where those teams are drafting. So you know, it's kind of like the two receivers, you know, the Cooper, Amari Cooper, and Kevin White. A lot of scouts have them equally graded, but what it's going to come down to is the need at your wide receiving core. Cooper's more of a possession receiver. White's more of a speedster. So, you know, what do you need?
Also, system too. White didn't necessarily come from a true NFL ready type of a system. It's unique at West Virginia. Those are the types of things you need to evaluate.
Exactly.
Agree. Let's try to get another caller in before we wrap things up here. Frank is in Tampa. Frank, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Great to talk with you. I'm not as excited about the prospects that are going to be available as most folks. And I'll kind of tell you why. I couldn't agree more about the prospects being system specific. And, in fact, it's getting more and more that case because – I think the NFL is trying, you know, we're almost going to get to the point where we're forced to go to a 3-4 only because they're not producing 4-3 defensive ends and 4-3 outside linebackers any longer. And I think it's going to create a problem for our team and others down the road. And, you know, if you look at the prospects that are available, I mean, I don't get excited. And here's why. I've got 8 or 9 positions that if you look at what the Giants really need, I don't think there's a player that's either there or will be there, and I'll run through them real quick. To me, there's certainly not a can't-miss cornerback in this draft. There's maybe one, but not a can't-miss. There's no safeties whatsoever that are worthy of a 9 pick. As far as left tackle's concerned, there really aren't any. You know, the last 10 years, there's been 2-3 that are givens are going to go in the top 3, 4, 5. There's really none this year. Defensive end. For our system specific, there's really one Fowler that we know can play play on the outside and also handle the run. He's the only one really in the draft. All these other guys are tweeners that are more suited for a 3-4. And a middle linebacker, there's not one true middle linebacker in the draft worthy of the 9 pick. You go to defensive tackle. The kid that from USC that's going to go, you know, second, third, or whatever, is really the only D tackle that's worthy of that pick. There are no tight ends whatsoever. We don't need a quarterback. And there's probably two wide receivers that are of that quality, and they're both going to be gone before we pick. So I look at this and I go, man, I don't know if we're going to trade down, get some more picks or something, but I do not see a player that I'm going to get hugely excited about.
Well, Frank, I don't mean to cut you off, and I'll let you continue. You know, listening to you give your dissertation, it reminds me of last year and Odell Beckham. Not a lot of people were talking about Odell Beckham going to the Giants. Not a lot of people were all of a sudden getting excited over the name Odell Beckham. And then all of a sudden, it was a huge pleasant surprise. So while I understand you're breaking down your mathematical equations and you're, you know, trying to squeeze him into number nine, it's not necessarily working for you right now. For all we know, there's a player we're not even considering that the Giants are focusing in on, and he could be a pleasant surprise as well. You know that could very well happen.
Oh, no, I agree. It's just, you know, in looking at it, I said, I'm trying to think of, except for some complete fluke, you know, that who I'd really get that excited about. And you're right. There could be somebody else that turns out to be a star, but I'm not seeing them. And I certainly hope I'm wrong, because we're hoping we never have to pick ninth again. The other thing, you know, Lance, and Anita, nobody's talking about, but I haven't heard a word say anybody say anything about the center position. But obviously, you know, we have Richburg moving there, but in terms of a backup, I know we got that kid from Canada.
Brett Jones, yeah.
If he can play a lick. But, you know, if he gets hurt, what are we doing at the center position? And also, you know, I'm concerned. I'm hoping maybe we, you know, if we did get Sheriff, we end up with a, you know, finally a couple of 340-pound guards. But, you know, that, you know, Richburg, unless, have you guys seen him walking around? I mean, he's really light in the Levi's last year, you know. And to me, that guy's like 20, 30 pounds undersized. Has he put any size on?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily know. I didn't put him on the scale to weigh him, so I can't give you an exact answer, Frank.
At 295.
Well, keep in mind, I'm looking actually at the roster right now as you threw that out. He's listed on the official Giants roster on Giants.com at 6'3", 298. That's what his numbers are right now. I don't know exactly if this was updated yesterday, a few weeks ago, and so forth, but that's what he's listed as on the site right now. And to answer your question about Brett Jones, first of all, he's had limited work with the Giants because they're just getting into voluntary workouts. But if you see how he performed in the Canadian Football League, there's a tremendous amount of upside. I understand that we haven't seen it at the NFL level, but, you know, let's not jump to conclusions that there's not depth there until we at least see how these players project during the course of OTAs as well as training camp.
Okay, well, do you think he's listed number two right now?
I would say,
center on the...
if I was to break down the depth chart, I would put him as the number two guy. I'd also throw him in the guard category, too. People project him as potentially moving over to a guard at the NFL level.
Okay, I'll let you guys go. But, yeah, I haven't seen a 290-pound center playing in this league since about 86, so I'm hoping I'm wrong. But thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Frank, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
It's been a fun day. I want to thank Greg Cassell from NFL Films, who came on board giving us a little draft guru knowledge, and Damon Heward, who, of course, joined us, the part of the broadcast team for the Washington Huskies, giving us some insight on Danny Shelton, Marcus Peters, and Shaq Thompson. If you missed any of the show, again, it will be archived. You can go back and watch it.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow, as we are each and every weekday, with another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. I know we didn't have a chance to get to many tweets. Anita and I will check it out off the air. And if you have a question, you can continue to interact with us off the air using hashtag Giants Chat. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.
Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35-30.
One of the end zone punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!